stopped here in Havre, Montana. On this first stop, we ask that you please remain in your seats, keeping all doors and windows closed. We are fueling and servicing our locomotives at this time. After we are done servicing our locomotives, we will pull up to the depot. Passengers may disembark there. Also, if you're continuing on with us, you'll have a few minutes to step off, stretch your legs, and smoke them if you got them. Please do not go into the depot. You will be left behind. That happens numerous times here at Havre if you go into the depot. So please stay train side and listen for all boarding calls. Once again, we'll be pulling up to the depot after servicing our locomotives. And at that time, doors will open. Thank you.
JP to the IC real quickly, please. Thank you.
IC.
I say we walk all the way as far as we can, just get on and walk back inside.
All right. I'm not going to argue. It's not too cold. I'm glad I put on extra layers.
Yeah.
So it's freezing, right?
Well, I thought it was, but it's not really that cold. So we just got out of the last car. We're in the last car, the sleeper. And now we're walking past a coach car, which is basically two levels of seats, I guess. And then next to that, is that what, the cafe car?
Boy, I don't know. These look like coach and sleeper, and then the next one I think is cafe.
Actually, well, it's two coaches. Okay, so there's a two coaches next to us, and the one after that, that's the cafe car. And the cafe car has a lounge on the bottom floor, and that's where we get our Bloody Marys.
Yeah, I think that's this one.
Okay, so
we're in Havre, Montana, by the way.
Yeah, if that's how you pronounce it. And look, we're right next to a big steam locomotive that's enshrined here. They do that a lot. And the lounge car and the cafe is what we're walking by right now. So then after that, you have, I think, a trio of coach cars. And coach cars are just basically seats. And you have to walk through all of those to get to the dining car, which is where we have three meals a day. Which actually aren't bad. No, wait, did I get that wrong? Is this the... this is the dining car. Okay, so it's only one coach car, and then the dining car. So that's the kitchen down there. We're never allowed in the kitchen.
Yeah, there's a coach class between the lounge and the dining car.
And then all the rest, I believe, are sleepers, but these are Seattle sleepers. And there's three of those. So there's only one Portland sleeper that's in the back, and there's three Seattle sleepers in the front. And I aim to make it to the last car and then turn around and get back. But if we don't make it back, we can always hop on a Seattle sleeper car and just walk all the way back on the inside. Now, in front of the first Seattle sleeper is the baggage car. And... Okay.
Didn't yell that.
We'll stop right here. You can hear the diesel. There's two diesels in the front of the baggage car. But in the baggage car, there's hopefully baggage that we're bringing with us. And now we'll turn around and going back. So I guess we'll be outside.
Yeah, why not? We'll just keep walking.
So this is day three, and we've had a pretty good time so far. We arrive in Portland tomorrow morning.
Yeah, it's going really well. It's pretty fun, as expected. Very low-key, not too crowded. Had some good meals, and met a few people. I think we met somebody from... where was he from?
The guy from Chicago?
Yeah, he had been... I'm confused because he's wearing a shirt that said Georgia, but yeah, you're right.
He was wearing a shirt that said Alabama.
Was it Alabama?
Yes. They are different states, you know.
I thought it was Mississippi.
No, they're all different states. But yeah, he was from Chicago. He was visiting relatives in Seattle, and he really enjoyed taking the train instead of the plane. And yesterday we met people who had just returned from the Philippines, and this was interesting. They returned from the Philippines... And instead of renting a car to drive to their destination, which was in, of all places, North Dakota, they decided to take a train instead. So, yeah, you meet a lot of really interesting people that are taking interesting trips.
Yeah, and, you know, it don't have to have deep conversations, but it's always pleasant to find out what people are doing, where they're coming from, and, you know, how they're enjoying themselves on the trip as well.
Now, this is what's known as a smoke break. There's a lot of people smoking cigarettes on the platform here in Havre, Montana. This is a fueling stop for the train. And if you've ever seen this, it's kind of unique to Amtrak. There's little yellow stools that they put in front of every door so people can step down to the platform. You just kind of hang out for a little while.
Yeah, and the other... activity here in Havre includes a lot of freight stuff. In fact, we made that earlier stop prior to getting out at the station here because they had to fuel up the locomotives and check some of the equipment. There's actually a Burlington Northern or BNSF locomotive repair shop up just ahead, and then a whole bunch of track work vehicles actually just on the other side of the track, ready to be sent to wherever track needs fixing.
It's cool to be in the very last car, though, because you can just sort of step back and look out the back of the track that you've just passed over, and you're so far away from the locomotive, you barely hear the horn.
Yeah, we can't hear any of the engine itself, because it's just basically so far away. It's not like we're being rattled by it. Can maybe hear the horn sometimes in the distance.
That Duquesne whistle blowing, blowing lights gonna sweep my world away. I'm gonna stop in Carbondale and keep on going. That Duquesne train gonna ride me night and day. You say I'm a gambler, you say I'm a man, but I ain't neither one. Listen to that Duquesne whistle blowing, sound like it's on a final phone. Listen to that Duquesne whistle blowing, blowing like she never blew before. Blue light blinking, red light glowing. Lower light, she's at my chamber door. You're smiling through the fence at me, just like you've always smiled before. Listen to that Duquesne whistle blowing, blowing like she ain't gonna blow no more. Can't you hear that Duquesne whistle blowing? Blowing like the sky's gonna blow apart. You're the only thing alive that keeps me going. You're like a time bomb in my heart. I can hear a sweet voice gently calling. Must be the mother of our Lord. Listen to that Duquesne whistle blowing, blowing like my woman's on board. Listen to that Duquesne whistle blowing, blowing like it's gonna blow my blues away. Yo, rascal, I know exactly where you're going. I'll leave you there myself at the break of day. I wake up every morning with that woman in my bed. Everybody telling me she's gone to my head. Listen to that Duquesne whistle blowing, blowing like it's gonna kill me dead. Can you hear that Duquesne whistle blowing, blowing through another nuclear town. The lights of my native land are glowing. I wonder if they'll know me next time round. I wonder if that old oak tree still stands. That old oak tree, the one we used to climb. Listen to that Duquesne whistle blowing, blowing like she's blowing right on time.
So anyway, here we are. A bunch of time has passed since that rest stop. Basically the train split in Spokane. I'm saying it right?
Yeah, it splits off Spokane, and then one goes to Seattle, one goes to Portland. So it splits off there.
And we went to Portland. This happened in the middle of the night. I was dimly aware of the train stopping for a while, and basically we went on the smaller train. I should point out, we're near a train crossing, actually. Might be a little distracting. I really think he overdid it there.
That's a coal train.
I'll say it is. Doesn't sound very jazzy to me, though. Is this the kind of train they tried to keep from passing through town?
Yeah, but I think it was unsuccessful.
Man, that was loud. And I'm sure that distorted. I'm sorry for that, folks. That's, you know, there's only so much you can do as a sound engineer. When a train comes barreling through like that and the engineer is leaning on the horn, there is no sound equipment in the world that can keep that terrible distortion from happening.
As you were saying, we spent a couple hours in Portland because we got on another train after that train. I'll just say that the Spokane to Portland train, it's really pleasant. And when you wake up, you're basically along the Columbia River, and it was really, really phenomenal, especially with the autumn leaves and beautiful weather.
Yeah, but we lost our dining car. The bastards that went to Seattle took the dining car with them. So we wound up with just a cafe.
Yeah, it was a lot of packaged food.
Yeah, so I wasn't too happy about that. But we wound up in Portland, and we had like, 7 hours in Portland just to hang around, which sounds terrible. If you're in an airport, that's awful. But if you're on a train, you just get off and explore Portland. And that's what we did. We explored Portland and met some friends. Took the tram they have there, whatever they call the thing, and just went from place to place, and time went by quickly.
Yeah, and we took full advantage of having been Amtrak customers, and they have offers of luggage storage and stuff, so you end up being relatively unencumbered, and that's the best way to go when you're walking around killing time in a new city.
Yeah, and then we got on the what do you call it? The Cascades. That's the train that goes, I think, from Eugene, Oregon, all the way up to Vancouver. Actually, I haven't done the Vancouver leg yet. I thought it was a bus that went to Vancouver, but no, there's a train, the Cascades, and it's Amtrak, but it's also the state of Washington. And I have to say, you know, of the trains we've taken so far, this one impressed me the least. It felt like kind of like a commuter train. We didn't when you're a sleeper. A sleeper passenger, all your meals are taken care of, but on this train you just get a $3 coupon, which isn't enough to buy a bag of chips. So that was a bit disappointing, but, you know, the ride got us where we needed to go. In fact, every train we've taken so far has been on time, and the rides have been fairly smooth. So no complaints there. We wound up in Seattle, and we've been here the last few days. And what an amazing place. I always have loved this city, but it's just so incredible hanging out and going to various places. And we were here for Halloween. And my God, what an experience that was.
Indeed, yeah. It's very, I don't know, spooky, but also a lot of fun. I haven't really been trick-or-treating or celebrated. I mean, I don't really even do haunted houses and stuff. I don't really like horror films that much. But, whoa.
You didn't like that at all, did you?
Excuse me, I'm trying to broadcast here. Sometimes, though, you want to get into it. You have an opportunity, and I think it's especially important when you're around young people, and I have a relative out here who was interested in participating and, you know, getting some candy.
Well, he's two, and he never participated before, but he got it immediately.
Yeah, somehow there's, like, some unwritten instruction manual that, unsaid, unspoken...
It's in the DNA.
...education that kids just understand intrinsically what goes on, what it means to dress up. They just get it, and they don't resist it too much either. In fact, they demand that everything be complied with and you know, be as fun as it should be. They want all aspects of Halloween to be done right. They don't want any corners being cut and so on. So anyway, we were able to go to a particular neighborhood. Actually, it was a neighborhood that I grew up in, and it's just a really interesting kind of suburban cul-de-sac, kind of a development. And the development wasn't there when I was younger. Well, It basically was built while I was growing up. And then pretty much, I was telling you, pretty much all of my memories of Halloween were celebrated the way we did it in this cul-de-sac, which is basically you dress up and you walk this very small neighborhood with a whole bunch of houses. And it really, I think, has become a phenomenon because it seems like it's just doubled and tripled in numbers. But that's basically the neighborhood that I associate with Halloween, or at least with memories of trick-or-treating. And so we were able to participate and experience this with another family member.
Well, you know, I'd never experienced anything like this. I, of course, as a kid, there's another train coming. Hopefully this guy doesn't lean on the horn. As a kid, you know, I'd go trick-or-treating in my neighborhood. I had never seen anything quite like this before, because when we arrived... we basically saw that the streets were crowded with all these kids and parents, too. I guess where I did it, it was just kids. Yeah, parents didn't go with you. But here, it was just this amazing phenomenon of streets packed with small kids going to every house. And every house seemed to be really decorated to the max. They got into Halloween like I've never seen anybody get into Halloween before. And apparently, this train's coming in the same direction as the other one, and so he might lean on the horn, too. What is this? This is a...
sounder.
Oh, it's a sounder. This is a commuter train. All right. Well, he's a little calmer. You know, the sounder is a very attractive-looking train. Go on the internet and look up the sounder train in Seattle, and they just look really nice. I wish our trains in New York looked this nice, but... The one thing that, is that electric or is that,
That's the business end, and, it is diesel electric. That's the diesel locomotive.
Yeah, because these aren't electric lines here, so
no.
I guess it's all diesel. But the one thing I don't like about the sounder is the fact that it doesn't run all the time. It only runs pretty much in the morning and in the afternoon for commuters. It doesn't run on the weekends. And they say it's not profitable. Maybe it doesn't need to be profitable, but it certainly would be convenient to be able to go back and forth on the train. And when you don't have that, people stay inside and they don't go places. So, I don't know.
In the defense of Sound Transit, I would add that it's important to remember they're doing a lot of other capital improvement and transportation infrastructure expansions, I would rather them limit the service for a commuter line than have it drain resources from the kinds of construction projects that they're actually doing, like the light rail system being extended to Linwood in the north, or North Gate, and then to the south you have extensions being made to Highline Community College, and with projected proposals to expand further into like the south end in Tacoma, city of Tacoma in particular. There's also east side, that means light rail systems that will be going from east to west. And
they can do more than one thing at a time.
But
they can expand this too.
They're responsible not only for operating the existing systems, but they are the sort of body behind a lot of the projects that will come to be in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not just operating a system. They are operating a system and sort of innovating and building out the rest of what is essentially a non-existent light rail and local regional transit system.
Well, the thing also to consider is they have to share the track with the freight trains. In fact, we got into an extended conversation with a security guard because we were waiting for a bus because there were no Sounder trains. We had like a half hour to kill, and this guy was telling us all the history and rules and regulations involving trains, and apparently the freight train has to pay a fine if it delays a Sounder train, and the Sounder people have to pay a fine if it delays a freight train and things like that. And that's probably one of the reasons why they don't want to run the things in the afternoon and evening in the other direction. But still, you know, I'm from New York. I'm used to things always being there and running constantly and not looking as nice. So there's that, too.
Yeah, I totally understand. And I don't want to defend them too much, but from my perspective, like, you would have to remember that Sound Transit as an entity did not exist when I was a kid. Like, when I was younger, it was not a thing.
What, did people use horses and buggies? What, how did people get around?
Very funny. Very, very funny.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if I'm joking.
But just imagine...
It's the Wild West, after all.
Imagine that the MTA didn't exist when you were a kid, and then all of a sudden it was a thing.
I think it didn't exist when I was a kid. I think it was called something else. I think it was called New York City I don't know. I have to look that up. I'm sure listeners can help. But yeah, I get your point.
I've seen this arc of going from not anything to now a pretty substantive system. And believe me, it took so much. You cannot get anyone here in Washington to pay for anything. And, you know, it's constant studies and evaluations, and I mean, I feel like they spent two or three decades just doing surveys and trying to figure out what to build.
Let me tell you about the Second Avenue subway.
Okay,
right. That was first proposed in the 1920s. It's still not finished,
okay,
but at least we have a few stops.
Enough of the defense,
right,
and
yeah,
critique.
Let's go back to Halloween.
Halloween's much more interesting.
Yes. So here we are on the street with like hundreds, maybe thousands of kids and their parents, and everyone's going up to houses. This was one of the most positive things I think I've ever seen, because everybody was so friendly. All the people answering the doors were so nice to all the kids that were coming by. And I'm just not used to anything like that in New York, where people are constantly coming up to houses. It's just a unique environment, I guess, is really the only way to describe it. So it's a particular neighborhood, I suppose, that has this reputation. I don't think they do this everywhere in Seattle, but maybe they do. And I'd like to know if other people in other parts of the country experience this sort of thing as well. In New York, the way I remember it, there's just a bunch of kids going up and down the streets, getting as much as they could. Later at night, the big kids came out, and there was a bit of mayhem. Now I know parents wait for kids at the bus stop constantly, and they're always watching, so I guess they go trick-or-treating with them as well. You know, there's some schools where parents come to lunch with their kids, too, because they can't stay away so long. So maybe Halloween has changed, but I really think what I saw this Halloween in Seattle was quite unique.
Well, I'm glad you appreciate it, because it's definitely, as I said, it's basically what I grew up with, and it's my concept of it. Like, my mind's eye, when I'm thinking of it, I go back to those memories. And in conjunction with the traditional trick-or-treating. I mean, there were the older kids, too, you know, coming out late. I remember also the elementary school would also host a Halloween carnival, and you'd basically have the whole gymnasium turn into a bunch of booths, like a carnival or a fair or Coney Island or something. I don't know, like, you know, just different games and things like that. So I remember all of these different things being something you really anticipated and looked forward to. And then all of the candy that you got, you would, of course, save. And I'm sure that goes on to this day until, you know, Mom finds it under the bed or something and says she's throwing it out, you know, after Thanksgiving or something. But the neighborhood hasn't really changed, and it's cool to see people still enjoying this. And for me, like, to go back and revisit it. And there are rules, like there are, you know, a lot of chaperoning and stuff like that. And I think there's a system where, like, if the household is not providing candy, first of all, the ones that do provide candy often run out. I mean, they get completely swamped. We were in front of a house that had like 20 people in line.
Yeah.
They had awesome decorations. They had a whole graveyard in their front yard, and there was like 20 people in a line going from the driveway all the way up to the front steps. So think of houses with queues of 20 or, you know, more people.
It's like a soup kitchen, except a happy one.
It was unbelievable, and that tradition lives on. But households that do not want to host that many people or any people, or perhaps they don't have candy or they're out of town. Basically, when you have your lights off or if you don't have any decorations, that's the signal that you're not going to be providing candy. So trick-or-treaters oblige, or chaperones oblige, and basically pass through to the next house.
Hold on a second. You left out the trick part. Okay, that's very important to us in New York, where if a house does not participate, then they become subject to certain penalties. And that could involve shaving cream, it could involve toilet paper, it could involve breaking and entering, you know, whatever the situation calls for. But that's part of the entire understanding of what trick-or-treating is. Do you have it differently here?
I don't know that it's different. I did see a broken pumpkin when we were driving around.
Really? Wow. Okay.
On our way back. So I mean, I know that did go on, but I think, you know, you have to remember, people in Seattle won't cross the street without an invitation. So
yeah, that's right. The don't walk sign. If it's red, even though there's no cars coming, people don't cross.
People are very nice, very polite, at least on the surface. So.
And when I do cross, people gasp. You know,
you're very daring, and I think you're sort of setting a trend.
I'm not daring. I'm impatient. I just want to get things done. That's all.
No, I know people are busy, and I think it's catching on. You just a couple more crossings, and perhaps we'll change the traditions here in the Pacific Northwest. But all said and done, it was safe. It was good. We found a convenient parking. I mean, they were basically filling the streets and with people walking, and people just, I guess the parking rules just don't apply. People park on the side of the road everywhere. There's parents who idle their car and basically follow their kids, which I think is more what you're talking about with the parents that drive their kids down to the end of the driveway with the bus. I think that's the Halloween equivalent. Like, if you're
driving
your
kid down the driveway, that's a bit much.
Well, right. No, but
people do that.
That happens. Uh-huh. So I think that's the sort of Halloween equivalent, is that if your kids are out, you know, going house to house and you're in a car pacing them, listening to satellite radio or whatever, I think that's the equivalent. Like, you should either...
I didn't see much of that. I saw a lot of parents walking with their kids. I did see there was a cop park, too.
Sure, so. And he was idling and, you know... belching out exhaust in the neighborhood as well.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, you'd think if he's going to post up there for a while, just shut the engine off. You have all these tiny little lungs, you know, being...
Well, use an
susceptible.
Electric car or something, so you just, you know, quietly come up on
them. Yeah, why
electric cars must be great for cops, because they can sneak up on people.
Yeah, extra quiet-like. They should really take it into consideration. Why do you have to be there in an SUV? Anyway... They were out in force, or at least posted to make sure that nobody got injured or if, you know, anything happened and it was safe. But you should either commit, you know, either you're going to have them go and expect them back or stay in touch, or go and walk and enjoy it. And as an adult now, I think it was really fun. I hadn't been, you know, celebrating. As I said, I'm not a big traditionalist. You know, I'll get a couple pumpkins, which we did get some pumpkins this year to show off. But, you know, that's as far as I go. And I know a lot of other people are like that as well, that, you know, they consider it something just for kids. And I guess as a someone that I don't personally have kids in the way a lot of other people do, to experience it vicariously, I think it's different, and it reminds you that there is a lot of fun to be had, and it is all around, and that, you know, you may yet be a kid at heart, and it's those reminders to have a little bit of fun and to participate for the benefit of family or relatives. It's got that side benefit of raising your own spirits and bringing, as we talked about, bringing back fond memories.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, you did this as a kid a number of years ago, and you still remember it. We should never minimize the importance of things like this, having an event where kids are just having fun in the streets at night, trick-or-treating, enjoying Halloween. These are the things, as adults, maybe it doesn't mean so much to us, but these holidays, these special moments, they stay with somebody for the rest of their lives. And you know, your relative who did this for the very first time at the age of two, guaranteed that's going to stay with him forever. And we need to do more things like that. We need to be more positive. And I've really learned a lot out here, because people have been so supportive and friendly and just really positive overall.
Just on that note, I would take it even, you know, that that next layer as far as being confident and doing things without inhibition, dressing up and stuff like that. It's silly, and I think knowing that it's okay to try things on and to be silly or to look silly or have that kind of fun, I think that's really a important part of growing up, so that, you know, when you are out in the world masquerading in whatever environment, in school or work or wherever in society, that, you know, you realize we all sort of have identities and costumes, and that we all may be, you know, superheroes or ghouls and goblins on different days, and that, you know, it's okay to try that stuff and to be a little silly, be out of your comfort zone. I think there is something, as you said, deeper in those memories, because it becomes a part of who you are, and you maybe have maybe less fear, or you're a little bit more willing to be goofy or play a role for a day have that freedom in your identity and how you go about living your life.
Yeah, it is good to see people just being themselves and trying on things and just being creative and having that support from the folks around them. And it's, you know, it's a very different place being in Seattle than New York, but it's good to be able to mix in and feel like you belong, and to be able to converse with people that you might have completely different opinions. I mean, you know, you're going up to somebody's house to get candy with your kids. You don't know if they're a Trump supporter. They may very well be. It doesn't matter. And it doesn't have to matter what people are saying or thinking politically in every situation. And I think if we just remember that a little bit more, maybe the conversations will become easier, so that we're not always labeling and judging, you know, from the outset, just based on opinions. Now, actions are different, obviously, and we're not talking about that, but if, you know, if we can just get along and enjoy these things together, that opens the door to having more meaningful conversations, dialogue, solutions, things like that, and it's great that it's a kid's holiday that kind of opens up those doors.
Yeah, I think it allows you to loosen up a bit and as adults, maybe not take things so seriously, because you're right, you know, you don't go house by house determining if someone's left or right or center or, you know, pro this or anti that. It's really just about celebrating as a community. And I'm just so sorry about the weather.
Yeah, what the hell, Kyle? I mean, I've been here now over a week, and every single damn day it has been sunny and what they call pleasant. I don't like pleasant weather. I don't. I like storms. I like mayhem, wind. All the things that are happening, by the way, on Long Island, because I'm looking at the weather forecast. We missed a good storm, all right, and a lot of rain. You know, people say Seattle, it rains. They're always complaining about the rain. I don't see any rain. Where's the rain? There's no rain here. It's like Los Angeles. You know, come on already. You can't complain about something that isn't here. And in New York, yeah, we complain about the rain, but we don't make that our ID. Here, you know, it's like fake ID because you're saying that this is a rainy city, and every time I'm out here, you know, it's warm, it's sunny, it's bright. Sometimes there aren't even clouds in the sky. Today there are a few clouds, but there's no rain. Come on, Seattle, get it together.
Yeah, there's a real disconnect. And the funny thing is that people here seem to think it rains, too, as well as people coming from outside. Nobody really gets that it's not really raining that much. Apparently there was a little bit of storminess and some weather patterns weeks prior to arriving, but altogether it's been 40s and 50s and really pleasant, as
well,
you said.
It's November, so that's, you know, those aren't cold temperatures for November. But, I don't know, a few more days, hopefully something happens, it'd be nice. We are planning our trip back, and it's great because through Amtrak we're able to plan a completely different route. And, you know, it's my goal to ride all the routes that are out there. It's kind of hard to figure out. There's an Amtrak map. Like I mentioned before, I haven't done the Cascades section from Seattle to Vancouver. That would be the third train that goes into Canada. One goes to Toronto, one goes to Montreal. But I like to do that. We're taking the Pacific Coast Starlight, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, Coast Starlight.
Starlight, okay. We're taking that down to Sacramento. I think we've taken that train before. We took that train down to Los Angeles on a previous trip. But then we're taking the California Zephyr from Sacramento to Chicago. That goes through Utah. That goes through Colorado. I don't think I've taken that route before. I've taken the Southwest Chief that goes through Flagstaff and New Mexico and places like that. Of course, we took the Empire Builder that takes the northern route. We even did the southern route, the one that goes to New Orleans, and I forget what that one's called. But what we have to do is list all the routes and figure out what we haven't taken, and some of them are kind of obscure, like the one that goes from Boston to northern Maine, and it doesn't connect with anything else. That would be a cool one to take. But we're planning that, and I think we're taking three trains, and this time it's four nights, not three nights.
Yeah, that's going to be a nice long trip with a bunch of connections. We're slowly filling them in. I think we definitely have to start tracking exactly which ones we've done and logging it a bit. Thankfully, we get to share with our audience here, and we can go back and recount these things and listen just like everyone else. And it's really, really kind of cool, and it's, I think, so interesting to be back on the train and hear people talking about the train.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of changes going on with routes and services and amenities, and people are just still fascinated and still romanticize the trip. It's not lost that luster, and I truly feel that. It's, yeah, a little, you know, awkward in some ways, but it's no different than train travel elsewhere in the world, except you're here, you're domestic, and I overheard someone saying that they love seeing the country, that this is the way to see the country, which is something we said so many times, that, you know, flying, you just basically skip a lot of stuff. And seeing those stops, going out, seeing what the stations are like, what the terrain is like, and how it's all connected. You mentioned when we started how the rail connects physically from all the way out in Suffolk County to here in King County, and all parts below and above and in between. So, yeah, I'm sure we will take one up to Vancouver and fill in some of these other routes and, you know, perhaps see some new routes. I don't know. Maybe they will continue to develop this network and we'll continue to enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm always interested in the rolling stock, which is what they call the cars that are used sometimes. They're different in some parts of the country than others, or sometimes restored cars from decades past. But there was one woman we shared a table with on one of the trains, and she said something that really struck me. She said, taking the train makes her feel proud to be an American. Now, that sounds, you know, kind of corny, I guess, but it's quite apropos, because when you it's got nothing to do with political feelings. It has to do with actually going a land route and going through the backyards and going through the towns and seeing just how amazing this landmass is, the things we've built, the things that are existing naturally, the wide diversity from deserts to plains to forests to mountains. That is pride in where you're from. And that's something you don't get on an airplane. You just never get that. So you have these kinds of conversations. We've never had a kind of conversation that's divisive, because what's the point? And I think the people that are there on this this particular vehicle traveling slowly across the country are there to share a common experience. And we already know what that is. We already appreciate traveling in that particular manner. And that is what we want to share.
Yeah, even traveling like through areas that look distressed or that look like it's, you know, difficult and it's a very trying time for people, there is pride in surviving in places that are really far flung, that don't have the opportunities that the cities have. You can basically appreciate that life is different, that it is a challenge, but that people still find joy and themselves are proud of their neighborhoods and cities. And have all the creature comforts they need that perhaps would take care of us as well, were we in their neighborhood, and that kindness is an extension of it. They're what I would say is, even in the places you travel through that you say, gosh, oh, that looks tough or there's struggle, you know that there's still life that is persisting and thriving even. And maybe we can't understand it, but I think that journey is a way to begin to understand. And that's definitely what I heard in what she was saying about being proud of Americans in whatever they're facing, wherever they are, and knowing that you're a part of that. It's a really, I think, stirring message.
It used to be that the rail network was something that we all took pride in. It was something that was pioneered here in the United States, and it's really fallen by the wayside. I hope it has a resurgence. I hope more people appreciate the kinds of things that we're appreciating right now, as far as traveling and taking the train and seeing all the different routes and conversing with people, seeing the sights. It can really be restored. It can be improved. We can have high-speed rail. We can have more long-distance trains.
Wi-Fi.
Yeah, Wi-Fi on the train would be nice, although, you know, it's not essential. I'm able to do all kinds of work without Wi-Fi and just read and things like that.
I've noticed that cell reception seems to be slightly better. I don't know if that's just because of the oil boom or whatever on the Empire Builder route, but there seems to be really good coverage. I didn't ever feel really disconnected. And of course, when you are, it's a great time to just go to the lounge and read.
Or get one of those Bloody Marys.
Oh, yes, the world-famous Amtrak Bloody Mary.
We say that enough times, it will become world-famous, because every time we order one, we say we want one of the world-famous Amtrak Bloody Marys. And they always smile, they always know what we're talking about, and I'm sure more people are asking for them.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have libations on the train, that's a good one. Just one. You don't need any more, you don't need to overdo it. But it's a good tradition to start if you're so inclined.
Yeah, go to the lounge car and just watch America go by. So we're going to go back, take the Coast Starlight down to Sacramento. That's a sleeper train. That's one night. Then we take the Cardinal. No, wait, it's not the Cardinal. It's the, what was it again? The California Zephyr. That's it, from Sacramento to Chicago. That's two nights. And then we take the Cardinal, which goes from Chicago to New York, but it doesn't go the way we came. That would be the Capital. Well, Capital Limited is a different one. That goes to D.C. The Lakeshore Limited is what we took from New York, and that takes the northern route. This takes a southern route. It passes through Virginia. We pass Charlottesville. We go through D.C. and we come up the Northeast Corridor and wind up in New York that way. So we will not have doubled back on any of the tracks that we took to get out here.
Wow, you're good. I mean, I can't really keep it all together. You're starting. You pretty much have the whole network. I mean, I don't think I could recount it as you have. So, Wow, I'm duly impressed.
I don't hold a candle to some of the trained people out there that really memorize these things and know all the spurs and tiny routes and things like that. So, yeah, I know something, but there's so much more to learn, so much more to see, and hopefully we get to do some of that.
Indeed.
All right, well, we'll join you from somewhere else. Where might that be?
Well, the Amtrak Crescent is a northbound train. When you can't afford to stay no more in New Orleans. So I bought the cheapest ticket and I carried my clothes. And the blood beneath my eyes and my broken nose. Cause when life goes wrong, it just goes on and on. When life goes wrong, it just drags on. In the eastern time, dare to eat a peach, take it off my mind. That when life goes wrong, it just goes on and on. When life goes wrong, the train rolls on. Somewhere between right and wrong, somehow I manage to keep moving on. Searching. Forever till we reached High Point. The Lynchburg and Danville is a ghost-filled rail. If you listen, you can hear the engineer's wife wail. That when life goes wrong, it just goes on and on. When life goes wrong, the train rolls on. Politicians up in D.C. do. When life goes wrong, it just goes on and on. When life goes wrong, it just drag on. Somewhere between right and wrong, somehow I manage to keep moving on. Searching for any place but on the eastern shore, but now it's more New York down to Baltimore. It takes so much effort just to move this train. Why does everything around me have to look the same? Like when life goes wrong,